Anyway, moving on. You guys, we wrote books.
Go figure. We're authors. Hence why we have a podcast about authors. The book is called, the first one is, And I Thought Divorce Was Bad, and I Thought Being Grown Up Was Easy, and I Thought I Had It All Figured Out, and I Thought I Did My Journey Alone, and I Thought He Was the One, and yes, we got the misfit guy. The misfit guy. The sassy sway that leads to crooked, that leads crooked footprints.
Things that they say are things that I transcribe and report as they actually said them. So it's not like I'm making stuff up or putting words in their mouth. You know, other than that, you know, if Spielberg is pissed at me, I don't know. He has never said anything.
Okay, first of all, it's kind of cool that you said he has never said anything. So I'm hoping that would be in a phone call, not in like an email blast out.
Yeah. Or you know, an angry Twitter, you know, post, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
okay,
I really hope someday it would be like really a badge of honor to have Trump rip me in one of his tweets.
Oh.
That's kind of on my bucket list, you know, to have Trump rip me in one of his tweets. Calling me an idiot or whatever. I mean, that would just be fantastic. I could dine off that the rest of my life.
I have literally never thought about calling that a badge of honor. I would try very hard not to be in his scope at all, whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
But I've never thought about that. I guess you could. I hope you get to pin that on. I mean,
yeah.
Definitely,
well,
snarky.
You know,
I
have two wishes. One wish is, like I said, that he rips me in one of his tweets. And the second bigger wish is that I never hear he never does another tweet ever again.
Yeah, that's just
because
not gonna
he's
just
gone.
Let that go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not happening. You gotta let that one go. Sorry.
All right. All right.
Even if he passed away, he'd find a way to tweet from the grave.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, but I take that.
Okay.
I'd be happy with that, yeah.
Okay, I'm loving this interview. This is hilarious. All right, I should cover the MASH that you wrote for MASH and Simpsons and Cheers. That's kind of really amazing. And I just want to say that your sense of humor definitely, if you got to write some of the jokes, I want to say that your sense of humor showed up and carried it on to your podcast. But I really want to know, what was it like being in those type of writer rooms?
You know, it was great fun. Those were great shows. They were certainly very different shows. You know, and I'm happy to say, you know, sometimes people look back at things. And you know, they're kind of wistful, and they go, God, at the time, you know, I didn't realize how good we had it. But I can honestly say that when I was working on these shows, that I knew and appreciated that I was involved with something special, and I really did enjoy and not take a moment of it for granted. You know, I mean, I was thrilled and very lucky to be associated with these great projects, and they were just, you know, great experiences. You know, what I didn't realize was that 30, 40 years later, they were still going to be seen by people and still be appreciated by people. You know, you write a show and it's supposed to get filmed next week, and it's supposed to air in 4 weeks, and that's as far ahead as you're thinking, you know, making sure that the show is done and filmed and ready to go so that it can air in 4 weeks. You don't think that, okay, this is going to be an iconic episode that is going to rerun 7,000 times on 42 streaming services and cable networks and local TV stations, and that people are going to still be watching it 40 years from now. I think we would have been paralyzed if we thought that. So that's just a very, you know, happy and unexpected legacy.
I agree with that a lot. I remember someone said, I think you could write the book that it defines generation. I think that person greatly exaggerated my skills. But when I sat down and be like, oh, let me try writing this thing that they think I can do, you just sit there.
But right. I just want to project. You do your best.
Exactly. So keeping your mind like on the work that you have ahead actually gets you to be able to do the work. That's kind of cool. I've always been like, how do you guys deal with that stress though? Because I know like every week it's like a new script.
You know, I've always maintained that, you know, people talk about, well, writers, you know, make the big bucks. Well, we make an okay living. We don't make the big bucks that LeBron James makes. but, you know, part of what we're being paid for is not just our talent, but also the ability to create on demand, you know, and it's just something that you learn to do. Others, well, there are some people who can adapt to it better than others, but that's just part of the job, is you know going in that there are going to be days when you don't feel like writing, you don't feel very funny, you have a cold, you're mad at the network because of their notes, you had an argument with your spouse, and yet you have to go in a room and write a script because it's due on the stage the next day, and you just have to learn to compartmentalize, to put all of that stuff aside and do your work. And it comes over time, you know. It's not easy to do, you know, we're all emotional creatures, but like I said, that's one of the main reasons why you know, why they pay us the moderate bucks.
Well, they pay you more than novelists get paid, or heaven help, indie authors.
Yes, so, this is very, this is very true.
Everyone else, believe.
So, yeah, this is very true. I do not have to teach middle school while writing on Cheers.
Exactly. You get to write on the show. So was it different?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just following you. You're the one in the snow, so.
Yes, and I'm sitting here thinking, guys, I have on Uggs, and you know, like, Uggs are sitting there, and it's like, it's soaking up the moisture, and I'm like, well, I think I'm going to have to conclude this one a little sooner. I'm sorry. There's nothing like wet socks to get you moving.
I understand. It's like, no one should have to get trench foot by interviewing me.
I don't know. Definitely worth it. So I do have to ask about the book before, you know, my socks get completely drenched. I need to ask about the book and the 60s. How on earth do you remember them, first and foremost?
Well,
I grew up like that don't remember.
Yeah, well, I grew up in the 60s, and I grew up in LA, and it was like really a very cool time because it was such a transition in the country, you know. When the 60s started out here in California, it was really the California myth, you know, Beach Boys and surfers and Gidget and, you know, and all like that. And then, you know, the country turned and became hippies and the Sunset Strip and the music changed and everything changed. And I was in the middle of all of it. And I always contend that, you know, there's all these major events that happened in the 60s, but for people living through them, they all happened in the periphery. You know, for me, it was going to high school and trying to get a date and hoping to make enough money to get a car. And was I going to learn to surf and that type of thing? So it's very much a humorous memoir of growing up in very colorful times. And, you know, I find that, you know, people who are baby boomers certainly relate to it and understand all of the references. And it's also interesting for younger people and millennials to see and compare how different and how similar life was like being a teenager in the 60s. Yeah, there were a lot of things that were different, but also there were a lot of universal issues that are the same now as they were when I was facing them in, you know, my horrible period of puberty. So it's very funny, and you know, I come off looking like an idiot in a lot of it because I was an idiot during a lot of it. But it's available on Amazon, a Kindle print version, and I also do the audiobook. So if you want to listen to this voice for 8 hours, it's called The Me Generation by Me, Growing Up in the 60s.
Cool. And I say that because that was a cool period of time.
You know, it was a cool period of time. And, you know, you had the Beatles and, you know, the politics changed. Our view of politics changed. And, you know, in many ways, it was very exciting to grow up in that era. And it was also heartbreaking, you know, all of the assassinations and the Vietnam War and, you know, issues like that. So, you know, you had a lot of pluses in the civil rights movement and the civil rights bill and the women's movement. And then, you know, you had Richard Nixon. So it was a turbulent period.
It's kind of,
but in a good way, unlike today.
Yeah, it's like it mirrors a lot of what it is today. And I wanted to ask, and yes, I apologize for asking a question that's semi-serious while standing in a silly surrounding, but as a writer, and I recognize how you mentioned how L.A. and Gidget, and then you went on to talk about Sunset Boulevard becoming the center. As a writer, part of our job is to observe and then translate it in a way that the society can understand what's going on around them in the larger scope. That's what I have been told, or someone has written.
Right.
Was it Whitman that wrote that? I don't know. I don't do the classics.
Could have been.
Well.
Yeah.
I don't do them very well at all. But
Steve Sutton wrote that. Yeah.
There we go. You. Hey, we'll give it to either of you.
That's right. That's right. It was either me or Bob Dylan. One of those two.
Yeah, there you go. Is it still the cool spot? Has it changed to become the cool spot?
Well, you know, honestly, it's not as cool these days. The traffic is much worse. There's way more road rage than there used to be. And, you know, back in the 60s, especially the early part of the 60s, there was just a general hopefulness, and, you know, you looked forward to the future, and, you know, here's the difference, okay, in a nutshell, between then and now. Then you had all of the surfers and all of the fun on the beach at Malibu, okay? Now you have brush fires burning homes in Malibu. Okay? That's the difference.
Huh. Okay. But you guys still have the Kardashians. It still makes it kind of cool. But anyway, I'm going to have to ask you that last question, that famous question that Jade asked.
Okay. What is it?
Famous question that Jade asked is, you know, tell us where you can find you, and then, of course, what's next?
Oh,
it's a really simple question.
They can find me, well, my podcast, Hollywood and Levine, is available on iTunes and all of the various podcast apps. I have a blog called buykenlevine.com that I've had for 13 years. And what's next is I've been writing plays. And I have a play that is going to be done in Brooklyn in January.
Can I come?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love how you
absolutely went. And it's indoors too.
It's indoors.
So
oh yes.
Yeah, definitely. It's indoors. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to do this interview. And
my my pleasure.
With me doing it half like crazily. But it's been a pleasure to have you here. And as you guys can remember, that you can find everything about your ladies at andwethought.com. Please know that season 2 of Just Right in Life is up on Amazon. And also that when you go to andwethought.com, go to the ladies tab, go to the middle of the page, and find the charities that we proudly support. There's 3 of them. It would be a wonderful if you could support them too. And yeah, that was a UPS truck driving by, so I had to move out the way. It'd be wonderful if
you could don't get them hit too. Interviewing me.
Exactly. It would mess up my whole week. So, you guys remember that wisdom is all around you, especially today. So, wisdom is all around you if you're open to looking for it and accepting it. So, peace and love, you guys, from Winona and the Missing Jade. Bye-bye.